Welcome back, Survivor fans. Season 25, episode 8. That's it. All right, let's go. So
game on, I love it.
I had a birthday this week, Chris.
You did.
And,
that's true.
We were sitting around, and of course, people at the table wanted to talk about our podcast.
It's true. It's true. We're the buzz on the street.
I came in today, and I felt like, you know, much like Obama was given a mandate by, you know, America. Mm-hmm. I felt like that table gave us a mandate to continue to be, clueless as to the things we were referring to be, rambling on and to,
you mean
to
like
talk
when
about
we reference things,
things that
from
are,
previous seasons of
yeah,
Survivor.
But can't come up with the names of them or want to come up
exactly
with some name
sure.
for some yeah. Dutch body
well,
of water.
Here we go.
We
I've got Exhibit A for that for this. You know, we can check that box off of our list here for today's podcast. About a week ago or so, this was like a day or two ago, but I'm behind on my watching. I TiVo Jeopardy and watch all the episodes. And I'm about a week behind. So this actually aired about a week ago or so.
See, this is the kind of like, 40 second backstory that people want.
Exactly.
For the story.
This is, that's, I mean, we're I checking mean, off like five boxes here.
Right, yeah.
There's so many different things
this
that are
wonderful.
So endearing
I love where
about
this
our
is
podcast
going.
That are right. encapsulated in this story. So watching Jeopardy the other day, it's from about a week and a half ago, and the clue is something to the effect of, this is the name of the code that Japanese samurai live by, or something to that effect. I may have even just insulted a culture and assigned the wrong Asian culture samurais or something, I don't know. Mm. And the answer was...
Hang on.
Do you know what it is?
The code is... Wow, I did know it. I just don't know it now. Go ahead.
It's the Bushido code.
Okay.
Philip.
Missed it.
Philip Shepard. Do you not remember him doing the whole Bushido code thing?
I missed it.
Oh, my God. Ralph. Okay. Listeners, I'm taking applications for a new co-host for this podcast.
No,
are you kidding me? This was like three seasons ago. It was Redemption Island season.
Well, I mean, I guess I knew what he was talking about then, but I don't recall specifically him going all Bushido code.
Yes, it was the Bushido code. Oh, I'm so disappointed.
Did you not know what he was referring to at the time?
No, he gave you backstory. I mean, I don't remember if he said it was... I think he said samurai. I don't remember, but... I mean, I couldn't believe it when it came up on Jeopardy, and I was like, oh my gosh, Bushido code. It's great. It's gold. And actually, to be honest, I think when I recalled it, I thought it was Coach's thing, but now that as I was telling the story now, it suddenly hit me that it was Philip, not yeah. Coach.
You know, the thing is, like, again, I feel like we came away with a mandate to continue doing the absurdities that we've done, and I feel like in some ways it's been defensible, given the ABC nature of this season, but
yeah.
All of that went out the window tonight.
It did.
Every little part of it.
By the way, did we botch it last week? Did we say that we thought that RC was not going on the jury? But she
yeah, well,
jury.
Jeff didn't say it.
No, he did. Because at least it was in the previously on Survivor or whatever.
Oh.
He actually does. He said it at the beginning
they
of this episode.
They spliced that in. He didn't say it.
I don't know.
We would have heard it. One of us would have heard it.
Not necessarily.
CBS is playing games.
Because by then I'm usually like typing out my final notes and I'm not paying attention to to the rollout. You know, I mean, with the exception of noting whatever the music is and if it's
or low pitched. Oh. Yeah. So for me, this was an all timer. This episode, like from start to finish, I don't know what else
it
you
was.
Want.
I'm not sure I would go quite that far. I mean, there are some.
Jeff said,
"What do you mean? What do you mean?
Craziest
all, what does an
all
timer mean? Like, if you were putting
just
together
one of those episodes that you always remember, that you'll always talk
okay.
about, like the
so
episode
like,
where
like top five all time.
Who knows? I mean, you'd have to be a little more exhaustive with your research, but
right, which we
you know,
are not known for.
Just the fact that from beginning to end, like it began with Penner having a very honest conversation with Jeff Kent that most people
yep.
don't have the guts to have.
Not only do they not
ending,
have the guts to have, they also don't have the ability to be as level as he was in that conversation.
Yeah, and not lose their head about it, yep. and just to analyze it for what it is, and then ending with what was again what Jeff called one of the craziest tribal councils the craziest tribal council he can recall.
Yeah, he said it was, I think he said entertaining, actually. I would disagree, though. I think
We've had plenty of good ones.
Yeah, there's been, you know, I could probably come up with five that involve Russell Hance that I put ahead of this one. but nonetheless, it is the most, it is certainly top five all time, excluding Russell Hance episodes. Guaranteed it's top five all time. Possibly top five all time, even including Russell Hance
episodes. I'm not going to fight you on that one, but and you kind of like, again, like just coming back, that first shot, I can't believe like this conversation is going down like this.
He's yeah.
Just talking to this candidly as he is, and then you know, Scoopin comes over and like,
yeah. Well, and I was impressed that Jeff actually maneuvered through that fairly well. I mean, he was this was a hand in the cookie jar moment for him, and he was able to sort of, you know, just, you know, it was actually somewhat similar to the like Rob Mariano defense when he didn't save Lex all those years back in All Stars, when he said he would protect Lex and then didn't, and it was
after
just
he saved
and he basically says Amber. Right, yeah, exactly, after he helped him with Amber, and he basically says, you know, it wasn't there, you know, the momentum was against me, and I just, you know, I had to do what was right for me there, and you know, and Penner kept a very level head and was like, you know, that's pretty much, you know, the trump card, you know, the trump card is I got to do what's best for my own skin ultimately. And if somebody is willing to lay that out there and say, and be as blunt as saying, you know, and that just happened to go against my alliance with you, well, then you kind of have to just say, okay, I guess that it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like there were ripples that kind of affected everything else from that moment on, especially you know, the next scene, we have Scoopin and Penner kind of, you know, consoling the other returning player and saying,
right,
that, you know, keep your head on, you know, keep your nose down on the ground, and, you know, Scoopin's like, there are cracks in that alliance, and we'll find a crack to exploit it, and you know, until I had read my notes again, I'd forgotten that had even been said at the beginning of the episode. And,
right.
It certainly looks like, you know, that definitely manifested itself at the end.
Well, and Scoopin is such a wild card. He is wow, he is an island, and he is, I mean, he is,
but that's
he,
what you want, Chris.
He's a man alone,
people
on a
that
boat
are making decisions
going whatever way he wants
on their own, you know, like, this is what I think is right for me, and they're not just being blindly led.
That's true.
You know, if you want to talk about control after this episode, I think you're kidding yourself, you know.
Oh yeah
You're absolutely kidding yourself.
Definitely the reason why I would hold back on singing this episode's praises to the highest degree is I feel like it actually teased it, last week they teased a little bit more like super scramble from Penner, and we actually didn't really have that, you know.
I wouldn't judge an episode based on its tease.
I guess I just felt like we were gonna get like
Penner exhibition of just classic, you know, super scramble,
yeah, okay. Just going, yeah, Waco on the camp, you know, and, you know, just burning it down, and, you know.
But I like a misdirect every once in a while. I don't want to be told.
I want to
be pulled in different directions and let that happen. And that's what this game is best is, when it's pulling you different directions. And coming back from commercial, we definitely got that where, like, Lisa / Blair, she shows the plan. She's like, it's gonna be this and this and that. It's gonna be Scoopin and then Penner and then me and the former Matt Singh and Calabao are going to throw off the unpleasant three of Artis, Abby, and Pete. And, you know, my notes on that are like, well, yeah, this is never going to happen. Like, now that you have revealed this plan, we know that this is never how it's going to go.
Right, that's true, yes.
I had no faith like that was going to be what
this is
what
like
happened.
Reading a Dan Brown novel or something here. As soon as all signs point to Person X is clearly not the
well, that's when they show
villain
up dead.
What's that?
That's when that person shows up dead.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so we get to a reward challenge, and even this was great because the teams ended up splitting down some of these lines that Lisa had drawn up for us. Is it okay if I call her Lisa? Did you want Blair? Like,
We can go back and forth. Our listeners know where that name is ambiguous. Or not ambiguous, they're interchangeable, sorry.
Interchangeable. Yeah. So you had the Unpleasant Three and Scoopin' and Carter, and then the rest on the other team. And it was a great challenge. People traded the leads back and forth, and in the end, Penner and Kent, and Jeff Kent just destroyed the puzzle.
Yeah, they did.
It was machine-like.
Well, and the funny thing was, is at first I was wondering, like, why are they, like, they sent out, was it Blair? Yeah, they sent Blair out.
Yeah, Blair.
And not only that, but they did, I feel like they were a little foolish, because they sent Blair out, I think, on the third one. And at the very least, she should have been first or second. Because at least she's not going as far, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But then I realized they were saving Malcolm because you needed somebody fast for the, like, whoever didn't go out had to do the digging. Yeah. So
and
that was
Jeff was the heaviest, and they wanted him for the pulling.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point.
I still think she should have gone second.
Yeah, I do like the technique though of the just grab the rope and run up the beach. That I think was way smarter.
Oh, instead of going hand over hand?
Instead of hand over handing it. Yeah, you're right. Like, what you should really do is pair people off, have two grab and run up the beach, and then as soon as they've gone as far as they can, then the other two grab and run up the beach while the first two come back. I think that would have been probably the best technique. I really have no idea, but I know this is what I like to do: dissect the challenges.
Yeah, you want to find strategy after.
I mean, I got shut out of that court case that I was on all week. I get shut out of the jury room. I don't get to, like, dissect the case and go, you know, deductive step by deductive step with all my jury mates. So I'm going to have to do it here.
That's all right. This is always a weekly opportunity to kind of vent to our dedicated and patient listeners. All right, so...
I like this group of winners. It's an interesting group because it's Jeff Kent.
Uh-huh.
And then a bunch of rejects, in one way or another.
I mean, okay,
Blair is the reject
Matt
from the beginning.
Yeah.
We have leftover Matt Singh, and we have Penner, who is the ultimate reject right now.
Yeah, correct.
So it's sort of a funny little group.
But it did break along, you know, people who are generally very positive and people who generally aren't.
That's true.
Know? So that was a nice contrast. And even back at camp, like, you see the images of, like, smoke coming up from a fire and, like, just, like, this grueling image of, like, them just scraping beans off of a spoon.
Right.
And, like, it was just very much a nice contrast with, like, this beautiful boat that's just floating down the river. And,
yep.
Again, like, you had to love it, especially because, you know, the strategy started happening where, like, for whatever reason, Abby just can't keep her mouth closed around Carter.
It's just insane! She just starts talking!
And Pete,
yeah, it's the
Pete,
four of us.
Like, just hating himself for being stuck with her.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at least Russell's cronies never got in the way. You know, like, he's trying to play mastermind, but he's got this sidekick who just will not stop getting in the way.
Well, it's funny. Pete's a weird one for me. Like, in some ways, he seems so sharp and so good. And in other ways, he seems like he's too sharp for his own good and his own foil.
Yeah,
you know?
He's like, a little early. I wish he had played this game maybe 4 or 5 years later. Like, he's just not in that spot to be dog, you know, alpha dog. Like, he's a young...
You don't think he's quite mature enough?
Yeah, I don't think... Because, you know, the statement that he made at the end of the scramble, like, you never really know if you're the mastermind. Like, someone wouldn't even care whether, you know, he knew it or not. He's just gonna do what he has to do.
He's gonna do it, right.
To do it, you know?
Right.
So... He's out thinking himself. I think your statement is relevant. Like, you know, he's almost too sharp for himself, and he's overthinking it, and he just needs to kind of, you know, he established something, and he just needs to, like, you know,
well, and like,
just
like, and I think
just
working
like a boss
with Abby.
Like, you know, you keep people happy, you address all the little things, and you let everything take care of itself. You don't, you know, overmanage it.
Yeah, working with Abby, you know, is I think a good example of this. Is he's just. You know, he picked her because, you know, he feels good about working with her because he takes her to the final three and she's a great person to sit next to. Nobody likes her. On the flip side, the reason why nobody likes her is because she didn't shut up, and that's going to be a big problem when you're confiding in her.
Double-edged sword.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's Like, yeah, he's as much as he's good for himself, he's bad for himself.
Penner on the boat is trying to, I guess this was the scramble we had, where he's trying to just sort of let people know, like, hey, you know, maybe if we just started taking out three people don't like now, then we can, you know, worry about that later. And
I feel like he was too aggressive with that.
I don't think so. I think you know, he had to, in some way, you know, plant seeds, and it never came off to me as being overly efforty or whatever. So
really, I feel like any time he opened at one point with like something to the effect of, I don't even care about winning, or I don't even really think I have much of a shot.
That's right. Yeah.
Any proposition that starts like that,
with your flag
like,
going up,
exactly. It's just like, this is, you know, this is like this. It's the same as opening with, you have absolutely no reason to trust me, but you know, like, or when you're about to insult somebody, you say, "I don't mean any offense, but but I'm about to offend you. I have no chance of winning this, but here's a way that I have a better chance of winning it." Like, don't couch things that way. Just like, I feel like he just needed to be a little more subversive.
Here's the thing. I think what we're realizing is that I think we're giving people too much credit, because I think after 3 weeks out there, like, they really are starting to lose it. Because, yeah, I mean, and
I don't know, Penner seems pretty sharp.
This is only just to provide comparison, and as much as I love getting ahead of myself, I really don't. But, you know, Malcolm tells the worst lie ever to Peter, and Peter's like, oh, this means I know that for sure he doesn't have it. Like, I mean, I think they just are, like, they're not as sharp. 3 weeks out, food deprived and sleep deprived.
I don't know. I thought Malcolm did a good job with that, actually. Like, he sold that really well, I think.
I didn't believe it.
Like, his comment, he was very cool. You didn't believe it. You didn't believe it because you know the truth.
I knew it. Yeah, that's right. I knew it.
Yeah,
I knew.
It's always easy to know who's lying and who's not when you already know the truth. You know, he was very. I feel like he was really quick and natural with that line about, you know, my pulse wouldn't have been as high as it was as soon as when I was forced to join your tribe or something like that. You know, if I'd had that idol, I wouldn't have had a, you know, my high.
His follow ups about like asking who told him and stuff like that. Like, I don't know.
Well, no, see, that was good too, because the thing is if he says Lisa, then bam, then he's out. Like, because why else would he say Lisa? Because he knows Lisa knows, you know. So I feel like, I don't know. I thought he handled it well.
Like I said, I didn't want to get that far ahead of
it. Oh, well, whatever.
There was a lot of whatever before that, so
that's true.
I don't want to pass it up. I feel that after we saw Penner talking about trying to vote out the Evil Three, then we started to see a side of Lisa that we didn't know she had.
Yes,
it was really interesting, because she says, as much as it would be nice to go to people, you know, go to the end with people I like, you know, I am trying to win this game. And we saw how serious she was by saying she would go back to being with the former Tan Dang. Like, it was brilliant, and at the same time sort of disturbing that she was willing to go.
We could even corrupt this one. We could corrupt the old church lady.
She's not an old church lady.
She is an old church lady. She runs like a women's faith group.
But she's not an old church lady.
Well, prior to that little confessional, I'd say she was.
She gets the ear of Scoopin, telling him about Malcolm's hidden immunity idol, and Penner shows up, and, you know, obviously she's thinking about cutting his throat, but at the same time, she's so nice and warm at the same time. It, like, it is amazing how well she can use her sweetness to disarm everyone, and I think that is so interesting. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, Penner walks in on that conversation. She tells him exactly what's going on.
Yeah, and he was like, that's great.
Well, you know, it also works because it's Penner. I mean, because Penner is, this is his third time in the game. Like, he's already displayed that he's very capable of having very frank, honest conversations about this stuff and keeping a level head about it and not just flying off the handle about it. You know?
Without being the third turn in the game, Lisa is also very cool. She's very cool under pressure. You know, she she had a lot of things go against
her. I don't know if I'd say she's that cool under pressure. I mean, we saw her the first week she lost
it. Yeah, that had more to do with her personal demons. I'm just talking about the fact where when she's dealing with gameplay. You know what I'm saying? She was just dealing with some personal issues there, and I see. I guess I'm seeing a difference there, and I could understand if you don't, but there's a difference for me.
I felt like I mean she's certainly stronger than I thought she was. Mm-hmm. I feel like at Tribal Council she was a little like, uh-oh, the ship's going down, and just sort of like just started saying things almost.
That was a Tribal Council where you could just say things. It was okay.
I mean, it was, but she was not. I guess what I mean is she was just not terribly eloquent about it. She wasn't really. I don't know. I mean, well, again, we're getting ahead, so let's not go there yet.
We get to the mini challenge, and pretty much it's a Penner ultimatum.
Yep.
Win or go home.
Did you see his start? Did you notice his, like, he gets
where
one
he put
hand.
The arm up like a
sprinter? Yeah, he put the arm up like a sprinter.
I was wondering
I
if that was him.
It was great. It was fantastic. He's like, I am in this, and I need to put everything I have into it, and that means mimicking everything I've ever seen about throwing your body into things. And that's what he did. I mean, he threw his body into the start there. He was, you know, tearing away at those knots. He lunges over the line to barely beat out Scoopin. It was amazing. It was fantastic. I was pulling for him so much there, and it was fantastic.
Especially because you knew that there was no clear plan B. Like, if he lost, if he won,
well,
what
I feel
was going to happen?
Well,
then?
At the time, it seemed like there was a fairly...
What, Scoop?
That Scoopin' was the fairly obvious default after that. But, I mean, obviously that ends up being not nearly as clear as we thought it was. Yeah. And then his comeback on the puzzle. Oh, amazing.
it felt like the rope-a-dope. Like oh, you know.
Oh, I
like,
did. I kind of thought that myself, too.
Both of them. And...
Like, just watching him do it, I felt like... I mean, I hate to turn this completely mathematical, but it felt like I was watching an exponential curve in progress. You know, it starts off real gradual. I was like, but there is going to be a turning point where it is going to, like, you just sort of felt like it was just going to come click into place for him, and he was, you know, it was going to be like that move in checkers where you just jumped like 9 of the opponent's guys, you know, and there's, you only have 8 guys, so there you go.
It was almost Hollywood-like in how much the other guys just kind of got stuck, and he just was just, bam, bam, bam.
Yep,
you know?
And he rattled them off.
And you were like, why is he putting pieces in the middle? And then at the end, you saw like how it was all coming together. And
yep.
It was incredible.
It was fantastic. It was a fantastic run. It is always great when the person that...
Who needs it most.
Absolutely, obviously needs immunity the most is in it and pulls it out and comes from behind twice, it seems like, to do it.
Yeah, no joke.
It was awesome.
No joke. And CBS gave it the appropriate, like, epic little score at the end.
Yep. Oh, he did his little, like, dance or whatever. Uh-huh. And Kent was so sore and bitter about it.
Yeah.
He was a little bit of a bitch about that.
Yeah, he was. That's right. Hey, the guy's a gamer. And you know what? In general, I think it's generally agreed upon that baseball players are not the nicest guys in the world. I don't know if you hung out with the baseball guys in your high school, but the high school baseball players I know in high school were just kind of smug. You know, they kind of spend all their time around each other, and they're very self-important.
Interesting. I mean, Penner was a bit over the top with his celebration, which you know might elicit that sort of reaction from Kent. But on the flip side, you deserve, when you are so clearly the next person going.
You deserve that.
You deserve that little bit of gloating.
Did Troy do that? Troy did that.
Troyzan? Yeah. I mean, that was the person who came to mind, was Troyzan when he needed it. And I think he did it. I think he ended up not getting it, so he ended up sulking instead of gloating.
But he did. No, he did it once. He got
it once.
Did he
do it once?
The next time he didn't. Yeah.
That's right.
And he stood with his back to the challenge.
Yes. That was the, like, that was like the practically the girls' jello wrestling.
It was. Episode. They're all oiled up. Oh, my God. Okay, we can talk about that. We don't have to talk about this episode. We can just talk about the oil challenge again.
Oh, dear. So after tribal or after the immunity
challenge.
Why are you
changing the topic, Chris?
What?
Why are we changing the topic? Why can't we talk about the oil
challenge? Oh, stop it. It seems so. Malcolm starts asking about, you know, what are we gonna do? And they all start saying scooping. And it actually seems pretty genuine that they all plan to do scooping. But like the way it was being edited, it really just seemed like Malcolm was totally gonna be going. And maybe that was just good editing to set it up because of where we were headed in the episode. But I don't. Did you feel like that
at that moment where they were all saying scooping?
Yeah.
I think you had spoiled it for me a little bit because you told me it ended well, and I thought as soon as everyone said scooping, I was like, well, it's clearly not going to be scooping. So you poisoned my feelings.
Oh, whatever. I said it ended well. Saying something ends well, that's
why
not
would
like...
it end well if it's already scooping? Like that, then that's not a good ending. That means it was scooping. ABC.
I guess. Whatever.
This episode is anything but ABC. It was A to B to C all the way to Q. Like, that's how far down the line we got.
What? No, that makes no sense.
If it was,
it would be like A, Q, T, L, M, B. That would be the opposite of ABC. Not just going further down the alphabet. That makes no sense.
Stop punching holes in my analogies.
There's one thing I can do, it's analogies.
Okay. So where are we? Blair goes and tells Pete about Malcolm's immunity idol. Blair says she wants Malcolm gone. Pete's taken aback. Doesn't believe Blair.
Well, at first he believes Blair, and he's very taken aback because he felt like Malcolm and he were total bros.
Bros.
You know, they had their little fratty
bromance
sessions together. And, you know, he's like, I can't believe this. And I kind of want to be like, you can't believe this. Like, it's not like you outright had already outright asked him if he had the idol, and he told you no. Like, that to me would elicit this sort of response. But, like, he came over, he never said anything about having it or not having it. You assumed he didn't, but, like...
He assumed it was gone, that no one had ever gotten it.
Right, and that's just, I mean, like, it's a shocker, but it shouldn't make you waver in your trust in him.
Given that he knows where the idol was, and that it was likely the same for every tribe, I don't know that I've worked under the same assumption that no one had it. It was the handle on the rice container. I mean,
oh yeah. I see what you're saying.
I suppose you could think it was gone if it was burned in a previous tribal council. They did go to four of them,
right?
So
right,
you could believe that.
Well, that probably would have come up at some point, though.
Yeah.
You know, in conversations with Denise and Malcolm.
Yeah.
But, true. I mean, but regardless, this doesn't seem like breach of trust material, you know? Like, not telling somebody that you have the idol when, like, especially considering his situation, you know, that doesn't seem like breach of trust material to me. So I thought it was odd that he took it that way at first. And then, of course, he goes to talk to Malcolm and... you know, buys every bill of goods Malcolm is willing to sell him.
Again, the fact that we know what the truth is definitely kind of poisons our ability to.
I thought he did a great job. I mean, because and to be fair to Pete, like I feel like he's right. Like, you know, Malcolm seemed very. He seemed very nervous about it all. You know, like, uh-oh, I might go home and I have no defense for this. When in reality, he was really nervous. He was just nervous because he was afraid he was outed and was going to be a man without a tribe or a man without an alliance.
At what point before tribal council did it become common knowledge that Malcolm did indeed have it?
I don't think
it
did.
Or was it not?
I don't think it did. I don't think everybody
knew. It just felt like at Tribal Council Blair was handling it as if everyone knew.
No, I mean...
Or was she just putting him out there?
Well, because Malcolm put it out there. That was the weird thing to me. Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves again.
I know. I'm just trying to connect the dots here.
I mean, I thought it was funny because Pete, you know, you made the reference to the line Pete said about being the mastermind. And at the time, and I obviously am not going to, this is incorrect ultimately, but I thought it was funny because I felt like Malcolm really was the mastermind at this point because, A, he had managed to con Pete, and B, he was looked like he was about to turn this around and Pete was going to be the one gone. I mean, it was amazing to watch all of that scrambling there.
That was great. That was really, really great.
You know, let's just get six right now. I mean, like, I really hate to put it in this in these terms, but, like, it had this weird sort of, like, lynch mob sort of feel. You know what I mean? This, like, sort of just, like, let's get six and we're going to get them. You know, let's go get the six right now. You know, this, like, sort
for
of,
me,
like, weird little mob mentality.
For me, the vibe was something that I hadn't seen on the show before, and I assumed always occurred. Not what you're saying, but the fact that it seemed like at the moment the scrambling was happening, everyone was packing for camp, and it was like they were literally half an hour away from being at Tribal, and like this was the last ditch. Like, go, 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 rally the troops, you know, we have to get this done now. And we just it never felt the urgency in that pre-Tribal Council scramble before that I felt on this one, just because all you saw were shots in the background, people moving around, putting on stuff. Like,
That's
it
true.
Just had it had a sense of
urgency. Everybody was moving.
To it we just have not had. Usually it's like two people pulled aside in a little forest and like you're just talking or out in the water, and it's not like this.
Because you got nothing better to do for 3 days.
And it's crazy because you'd be like, okay, they're at camp having this conversation. Like, you know, like a lot of people are going to hear what they're saying.
Right.
So there was a lot of public negotiation, and that was fascinating for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other interesting thing is they don't even consider that there's a Tandang idol out there.
Right.
And they get lucky in terms of who they choose, choosing Pete
Abby.
Over Abby. Yeah, because it was basically down to those two.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it was the right choice for a number of reasons. One, because Abby has the idol, but more importantly, I mean, Pete's the head of the dragon, right?
Metaphorical head of the snake that they want to cut off.
Exactly. So at this point, literally half of the tribe has been the next one going home.
Penner, Scoopin, Malcolm, Jeff Kent, and Peter.
Yes. Half of the tribe has been the direction the wind was blowing at that moment.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah. That's impressive.
Pretty cool. you know, the look on Lisa/Blair's face when she kind of goes to Pete is like, what are you doing? Like, it's like, what did you tell him? What do they know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and then
just the exasperation was so good.
You know? You could tell she was like, I think she feel like she was having sort of the what did I do moment. Like, I told the wrong person because now this is unraveling in front of me.
Well, I just don't think she lost control of it. She's trying to pull some strings, but she's not kind of controlling, you know, her lieutenants enough. Like, if she's trying to use Pete against someone, she's got to tell Pete, like, look, like, you can't talk about this. Like,
she needs to tell him how she wants to use it.
How she wants it, yeah. If it's your plan, tell him how you want it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you forfeit control.
Yep.
Let's move on to Tribal.
Great Tribal. At first, Scoopin opens, but I forget what he says, but he opens by basically just in one sentence without saying anything, saying everything. Like,
what's that?
I don't remember what his line was, but it was a very throwaway-ish sentence that in and of itself didn't contain any real details, but made it so clear that, like, Jeff, all you gotta do is pull at one little string and this whole thing will unravel and you will have a great tribal council. Like, he just made it obvious that, like, Jeff's job was gonna be real easy tonight.
and it elicited, I guess that's the point at which Scoopin's comment elicited the chuckle from Malcolm.
Right, and yes, and that's Probst what and Malcolm outs it. Himself. That's what I thought was so weird is, you know, Malcolm did have, I thought at the time,
plausible
Malcolm
deniability.
Had,
Well, plausible deniability, Andy had an element of surprise going for him. I feel like he ultimately ends up playing this pretty well at Tribal Council.
Oh, yeah.
But he did give up. He had the drop on Pete there, it seemed. And, you know, I don't know why he outed himself like that, because it wasn't, I feel like, and maybe this could be where you're right, that maybe everybody did know already, but it felt like not everybody knew that he had the idol, and he just sort of outed himself by, you know, saying Blair threw him under the bus, and you're right, Blair does very cavalierly just then share it all, but at that point I think it's pretty obvious what he's talking about. I mean, what else would she have said that could throw him under the bus? There's no obvious
alliance.
We need
to stop
using
already. That phrase, because it drives me crazy, because throwing him under the bus doesn't mean he wasn't throwing him under the bus.
Yeah, that's true.
No one's being thrown under the bus here. That's true. Like if, you know...
She just outed him.
In a sports phrase, if someone lost and you called out that person, that's throwing someone under the bus. It's like, you know, there was a loss and you're throwing all the blame on someone. That's...
Exactly.
That's not...
Russell Swan threw people under the bus.
Yeah. Right.
Russell Swan threw people under the bus before the thing started. It's like, you, go lie down in front of the bus.
You don't like puzzles? Here, there's a spot under the bus for you.
Right. Go do this puzzle right underneath the bus.
And then, I don't know, Blair talked about how she was trying to scheme to get Malcolm out, and I was just confused. Like, why would you even openly talk about what your schemes were and why they didn't work, or the schemes that you didn't work. I would never reveal what I was working on that you know, fizzled out. Like, that just seems like bad. Like, you're trying to get votes for $1 million.
Well,
like, why would you tell people I tried to get you out?
Well, because, I mean, at that point, it's obvious. I mean, there's
Is
no
that
salvaging.
Obvious?
Well, I mean, there's no salvaging anything with Malcolm at this point anyway. So
Because he's the one that told everyone.
Yeah, so she could be overt about it.
So how do we feel about her using...
And this is why I'm saying she's not nearly as strategic as, or as not as great as with the strategy as you were saying earlier. That I feel like she's still a little green with it all.
But it's a lot more than we expected of her.
It is. It is a lot more than I expected out of her. Yes.
Yeah. For a while, it seemed like we had a player here who was just happy to be on the ride and not thinking about playing.
Right.
And that was always a concern when they don't want to play.
Yeah. I love that Malcolm then just takes it out and is like, yeah, I got it. It was excellent. It was excellent, and I was so hoping...
It works if you know that they can't split you, you know, or they can't split both of you.
Right, right, yes. And you know, and he was pretty confident he didn't that they couldn't split him.
I would have been confident that they didn't have the votes split against me.
Yeah.
At the very least, you have 4 against 6.
And it's great because he shows it, and he has this little force field that comes with it, so he doesn't actually have to play it. I was really, really hoping that was his plan, was to show it and then not actually play it.
Wield it like an iron... What is it? Like, wield it like something. I don't know. This is what people listen for. This is what we talked about at dinner. Like
quite the analogist you are.
Just wordsmiths here.
maybe he
iron
wields
fist.
It...
Wield it with an iron fist.
What? No, that's not wielding it with an iron
fist.
I don't know.
What
are you talking about? He wields it. He's wielding it like a wordsmith.
Walk softly, but carry a hidden mutant idol. ask not what you can do for your idol.
Right. What now? I can't believe Abby then takes hers out. That was just stupid. I mean, it's vintage Abby, but it's just plain stupid.
How did Pete's head not drop at that moment? Be like, ugh.
Exactly. This is what I'm working with, right?
And then
Penner calls out the... I mean, this is where...
Yeah, calls for the vote.
He just calls out the vote, which I thought was amazing, but at the same time, very appropriate. I mean, like, everything was getting very overt.
Yeah,
and
Malcolm's
so,
like, here's the it's too chaotic, I don't, you know, and...
Yeah.
Everyone was very upfront, and that was the whole theme of the episode. It's like, let's just be overt about how we're feeling.
That's true. It started that way with Penner and Kent talking very, very frankly.
Very frankly.
So.
that's great. Better than people just sort of accepting what's happening and kind of waiting for their turn to get shot at the block. Like,
right.
People are fighting for their lives out there, and yeah. You and I, just that's what we've been waiting for a while. So,
yeah,
good on them.
An absolutely fantastic final 20 minutes to this to an episode that was already pretty solid just from
right.
just from Penner's performance
right.
In the challenge. And then this was
and then,
awesomely thick
slathering. And then Jeff saying, would anyone like to play an idol? And I felt that, like, you know, Pete would have coerced Abby into throwing it in there for him.
I was just going to say, I thought maybe Abby might play it for herself. That would have been even better if she just wasted it.
No, that was never going to happen.
You never know.
I know. I know. I should never doubt what Abby is capable of.
Right. And I loved, so then we're voting and Probst is reading the votes. Malcolm's reactions the whole time.
No, Jeff Kent's reactions.
Well, yes, and Jeff Kent as well. But Malcolm, too, like, Malcolm was along with it. He was like, oh, God, like, he thought he had it in the bag.
Yeah.
Like, even though he's okay because he didn't play his idol yet, like, he's still like, oh, God, maybe I don't have this one. And the funny thing was about the whole thing, you know, they're all like jaws hitting the floor every time another vote is read for Jeff Kent. And I was like, there was always going to be someone in your alliance who was going to get four votes.
Right.
Like, why is that a surprise? Like, why is your jaw dropping at vote two and vote three and vote four?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I can understand for Kent maybe a little bit just because it sucks to have your name keep coming up. But, like, there was always going to be four.
Chris, 3 weeks of food and sleep deprivation.
I guess you lose
your edge.
I guess.
I tell you. Or CBS is taking reactions from other episodes and somehow splice
right?
that.
Yeah.
Who knows?
That's good. Could be.
I don't know.
All right. So now let's talk about the voting.
Well, here's the thing. Going into Tribal Council, did you know who the swing was going to be?
Did I know who what?
The swing, like where the swing was going to be.
Well, yeah, it was going to be Scoop.
I don't know that I knew that.
Well, because it seemed pretty solid that it was going to be Malcolm, Denise, Carter, Jeff, and Penner voting for Pete. And
but wasn't Blair still? I mean, obviously in Tribal Council, like we found out later on. But wasn't Blair still like trying to decide which side of this thing she's going on? And then into next.
No, because she wasn't in on the Pete. She wasn't in on the Pete movement when they like at that scramble at the end. There,
yeah.
She was not in on that. She was in on the votes on the swing to Jeff after they left Scooping. I don't even remember the order in which it went. So it started off at Penner, then it went to Scooping.
Yeah.
Did it go to Malcolm and then to Jeff? Or did it go from Jeff to the Malcolm?
Malcolm, Jeff.
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, so good. But, okay, so they vote. And why the hell did Penner vote for Abby?
I think it's the thing where he wanted to position himself to be a free agent. You know, I don't think he's... I still don't think he wants to define himself as being one side or the other.
I don't get that. I don't get that because he was the one who said, "We've got six people here. Let's do what we talked about doing."
That's true.
Like, why would you do that and then go and vote for Abby? So strange. So very strange. I was talking to Stacey about it, and she theorized, and this is the only logical explanation I can come up with, that he's looking to. He's jockeying for jury votes. That he wants to be able to have deniability and say,
yeah,
"I didn't vote for Jeff Kent.
Pete,
I didn't vote for you."
Right.
And he sort of. I mean, it's actually
he basically
a little
voted
bit
out
smart.
Jeff. He basically voted out
did.
Jeff. With that.
He did because he was going to vote for Pete otherwise.
Yeah.
But I think he also realized it really was just going to come down to Scoopin. And if Scoopin goes with him, then it doesn't matter. That he threw away one to Abby. And if Scoopin goes against him, then he's going to flip anyway because he doesn't care. He just wants
to be... He doesn't want to go to rocks.
Right. Well, he doesn't care. He's got the immune... He's immune anyway, but...
Oh, yeah.
Do they still do the rocks? I don't think they would do the rocks.
What would they do?
I don't know. Did they say have they said in the last few seasons that they would go to Rocks, or is that just speculation amongst the contestants?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they've ever said. I think it's just speculation based on previous episodes of Pascal.
Because I'm pretty sure that they wouldn't do that. Because I feel like I've read somewhere that Probst
just fire challenges.
Well, Probst has admitted that that was a really poor choice on their part. That the Rock thing was a bad idea, and they.
But I think it's good. It's good. You know, it's good impetus to, you know, not deadlock.
Oh, not so that everybody doesn't just dig in, and you just sit there, continually revoting.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think what's going to need to happen. I mean, because now what's going to happen with Malcolm, and possibly with Denise as well, but very obviously with Malcolm, is the stuff that we've seen before is the sort of, like, just the force field of the immunity idol where you don't ever actually have to play it, right. And you get to just ride it because you've got it.
Right.
And what's going to need to happen in order for him to be out is for the entire tribe to be against him, basically, or at least a decent number of a portion of the tribe, and say, we have to all just vote for him and be okay with knowing that if he plays the idol, then he gets to pick one of us that goes home.
Wow.
You know, like, we have to just be okay with that.
How do you get a group to be okay with that?
Well, because the thing is you know, you feel like you need him out. Because the thing is I think everybody's going to realize real quickly he is not somebody you want to have at the final tribal council with you.
Yeah.
Like, he could very easily win against anybody. I mean, I think the only person he has difficulty against, or there's two people I think he might have difficulty against, Denise and Blair. I think they're the only two people.
Blair is so charming.
Yeah, and so you need to have him out, and so you know if there's five of you in an alliance, you know you'd rather have the 80% chance of making it to the final tribal council and knowing he's not going to be there, than 100% chance of making it to a tribal council that he is going to be at. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
especially, I get it. Especially if you're not named Lisa or Denise. Or... So. The other thing Pete has to be careful about, by the way, is he's smart about trying to take Abby with him to the finals. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But the thing he needs to be more self-aware, because while she is at the bottom of everybody's list, he is at the bottom of every list that doesn't include Abby.
Yeah, or Artis, yeah.
Well, I think people would vote for Artis before they'd vote for him.
Yeah, he does seem useful around camp.
Well, and he just feels less manipulative. Like, he's just sort of around and
he sure is
vote.
Sour.
He's sour.
He's very sour.
He's really only sour about Scoop, though. At least it seems.
And deal making.
And
don't forget.
Right. Well, but that was Scoop again, right?
You don't want to know what I think.
Right. We must have talked about that, but that drove me so nuts, because, like, he gets all down about that. It's like he was literally, like, begged for the opportunity. Or given the opportunity and begged for his opinion on the matter, and, like, he 100% waived his right to be pissed about what came of that agreement.
Oh.
I'm just saying.
Did you see Jeff's rant?
Jeff Kent?
Yeah.
Oh, in his departing confessional?
His exit confessional.
I didn't. I wasn't paying attention to it.
It was great. It was really great. You didn't listen to it, huh? Basically,
no.
Okay, let me sum it up for you. So he says, the thing that sucks is I've made $60 million playing baseball.
He's made more than that.
I really wanted this one freaking $1 million and the title. And he says, and it wouldn't even been a million. It would have been 600,000 by the time Obama took it. And I was like, Obama? Like, when did Obama create this tax against prizes? Like, that existed before him. So.
Right.
Don't put your conservative agenda on Obama like that.
I know.
Whatever. Mitt Romney would have happily taken 400,000 of that.
Exactly.
But it was great. He even went on to say, I've been in Game 7 of World Series. you know, been in championship series and.
Wow, this is a long confessional that I did not listen to. I should see if it's still on my TV.
You should go back and find it because it was really, really great. It was
like, oh, by the way,
this is how you wanted him to go out.
We forgot one part of Tribal Council that was like terribly amusing.
What, when Abby called the Alliance out?
No, when RC came in, sits down, and
Penner, like, just gave her the up and down.
Oh my god! I have never seen it so overt.
It was like a thirsty man finding water. It was just,
I guess really that was quite the harbinger of things to come. Like, we're just gonna be overt about absolutely everything at this Tribal Council. I'm gonna ogle you from over here.
Penner literally has nothing to lose, so he's just going to ogle. If he wants to ogle.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm going to ogle you.
He's like, yeah, all right.
I'm just going to hang out there, all these ideas of voting certain ways.
And then I'm going to go my own way. I'm going to vote.
Exactly. And then I'm just going to go rogue on my own plans.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What a great episode.
Yeah, well, it was out of left field, and that's the best. You know, like, you couldn't have seen this coming. It was like, okay, Penner lost, and blah, blah, blah.
Indeed.
Oh, well. We're not done, are we?
Yeah, I think we're done. Shall I put our social media bow on this?
Right, well, and then the deep tracks after that.
The what?
The deep tracks, the hidden track.
The hidden track, comes after. Deep tracks. I've never, what are you talking about, deep tracks?
Deep tracks, there was like a, you know, there was like a, never mind.
Anyway, you can find us online. Our Twitter handle is @TribalPodcast. I beg
are
you
gonna
to tweet us.
Tweeting going
to
happen?
There's actually a purpose for us to have that account. You can email us at podcast@tc.vanbee.net, and our web address for the RSS feed is tc.vanbee.net. You guys must be subscribing to that thing because you're clearly not checking it regularly, because otherwise we'd be getting emails saying, like, why did your episode go up on, like, Monday after a Wednesday's episode? But, hey, whatever works.
Hey, people are busy. Hey, okay? We have lives.
True.
So get
That's
off
true.
It. I had a birthday.
Yes, you did. You did. So. By the way, I've been meaning to tell you. So do you remember that prop bet I had with Pat about...
sex robots?
No, not about sex robots. That's a prop bet he has with somebody else.
Me.
Oh, it's with you?
Well,
he had it with somebody else, and then you came in
sex
on it
robots
as well.
That.
Right. Yes.
He's really hedging on.
Yeah. Sex robots. Well, he went. He said he was betting 10% of his wealth in 2035 against some other guy's 10% of his wealth in 2035. Anyway, no, the prop bet that he and I had, we had a number of them, but the one that I was really proud of, because I brought this one to him and I loved it, was a restaurant nearby here that I was
the
convinced
crepes?
Would be closing. Yes, the Crepes place, Crepes a Latte.
Crepes
and the
a
bet
latte.
Was, when we made the bet, it ended up being ballpark, plus or minus a week, something like that, an 18-month window for the place to close down.
Okay.
It closed down in 23 months. And while I actually bought out of the bet before it came due for half price because it looked like I wasn't going to win it, I have to say I'm really impressed with myself for calling that place was not going to make it and only being off by 5 months. I feel like that's something.
I think crepes are one of those things that sounds really great in concept, but just in practicality,
I disagree. Yeah. I disagree. Do you remember this? There was a place called, I think, the City Coffee Shop in Clayton, in St.
No.
Louis, Missouri?
No.
There was it was called something like that, City Coffee Shop or something like that, and they did crepes there, and that place... They can't have enough tables in that place.
Mm.
It is always hopping. The line is to the door every time you're in there because they make good big crepes. Like they stuff them full.
Mm.
This crepe place, it was like they took like a strawberry, sliced it up, put like
one spoonful of Nutella in there like, done. And call that, you know, the strawberry Nutella crepe, and they charge you $7 for it.
Boo.
And that's how I knew that place was never going to make any money, because it was crap what they were doing, and B, you know, every time I went by the place, it was, you know, there was one person in it, and it just seemed like it was just never going to make it. There's actually
really,
a sign.
You weren't really reaching then on calling.
What's that?
You weren't really reaching too hard on saying that, you know, this wasn't going to make it.
Still, I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, like, but how often do you actually go out, not only make a prediction, but make a prediction and actually place a wager on it? I mean, I ultimately lost it, but I didn't lose by a lot. You know, in terms of, like, businesses going under. And oh, by the way, at the time I made the bet, I was not aware of the fact that they actually were owned by a catering company that's been around for 20 years.
I think I knew that it was owned by a catering company. I think I did know that.
Yeah, see, I didn't know that when we made the bet. I found this out a little later. And so had I known that, you're going to cushion that time, because it's the sort of thing where there's another operation funding things that could keep that afloat longer to give it a bigger window to for everything to sort of gel and build momentum.
Yeah, like they're not going to, you know, forgo that even if it's failing immediately, because they kind of have some backup in there.
Exactly.
Yeah, I got you. I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
All right. Shall we actually stop recording now?
Maybe. Thanks for hanging around. And, you know, we'll
always good to have the B-track.
Fallout next week. And, just under an hour. Look at that.
Just under an hour. Excellent.
All right, next time. Bye.
Yep.